This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 26th of April, 2024. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And standing in for Paul this month, we're delighted to welcome Richard Stead.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Call for hospital to be built at Newtown. Petrified folk demand action. And flags flying as hundreds march. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Call for hospital to be built at Newtown. Developers say Mitchell Devastation is the obvious location. Developers who want to build a new town at Mitchell Devastation are calling for the site to be considered for the new hospital. The O'Flynn Group is proposing a 6,000-home new town on 1,250 acres of farmland surrounding Mitchell Devastation. Shane O'Flynn, development director, said, "That will bring large-scale residential development to the area and new housing for potential staff for a new hospital in the area." The plans are for a new specialist acute hospital on the edge of Basingstoke, using more than £800 million of government funding. The RHCH, that's the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, would be refurbished and a 24/7 urgent treatment centre opened with the downgrading of the A&E unit. The maternity unit at the hospital would also be downgraded to be midwife-led. The new hospital would open in 2032. The Deva Society has been opposing development plans at Mitchell Devastation for more than 30 years. Chairman Tessa Robertson said, "This comes as no surprise. O'Flynn Group will take every opportunity and grasp at every straw to promote the new town at Mitchell Devastation. And offering to provide the land for the new hospital is simply one more example. Mitchell Devastation was rejected as a site for the new hospital in 2020, despite O'Flynn Group's efforts to promote it, and nothing has changed since then. The new town continues to be rejected by Winchester Council, and the proposed Garden Village on Popham Airfield is facing strong opposition. Despite their efforts, they have no case to make." Mr. O'Flynn said, "This is the obvious place which can be the compromise acceptable to all the communities, and the land is available at Mitchell Devastation, equidistant between the towns of Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover, which has a rail station and excellent road access as well. As promoter of the land at Mitchell Devastation, I can confirm that the new site is available. An additional new factor since the NHS last considered our site almost 5 years ago is that the Basingstoke local plan now proposes development of a garden village at Popham.
Petrified folk demand action. Villagers want tougher action over who lives at a caravan park, with a meeting hearing that local people are petrified. Charlie Goodall raised the issues about Carousel Park off Basingstoke Road at the Mitchell Dever Parish Assembly in East Stratton Village Hall. The site is allocated for travelling show people, but it has been home to more than 50 caravans and subject to action by council planners over who is living there. Around 20 people attended the Mitchell Dever Parish Assembly at East Stratton Village Hall on Wednesday, April the 17th. Mr. Goodall said, "People are petrified. They have told me things that would make your hair curl. Very few people have come tonight because they are frightened of retribution from the people in Carousel Park. I really sympathise with the police because this has been happening for years. It's about time for action." The meeting's chairman, William Helen, said he was disappointed with the situation. He said, "Carousel Park has been a bone of contention for us for a long time. We allowed it as a showman's site. We were promised that's what it would be. It's clear that's never been the case. We all know we have day-to-day difficulties we have to deal with, but we're bitterly disappointed with the situation today." Mr. Goodall told the meeting that rubbish had recently been dumped in Black Wood next to the caravan park. He added, "According to the Winchester District Gypsy Traveller and Travelling Show People Development Plan 2019, it states the land at Carousel Park is allocated for travelling show persons' use. The site should be occupied by people meeting the definition of travelling show people. What I want to know is why Winchester City Council hasn't enforced its own planning laws and regulations." Councillor Jackie Porter said, "There was a Winchester City Council enforcement notice at the site some time ago, and it took a long time to come to the planning inspector. There was an inquiry just before Christmas, and the result of that came out recently. The inspector decided that the site would be regularised rather than closed or changed. The important thing is that there is a very clear set of conditions, and the enforcement started by saying they had to clear the site of rubbish. We want to work with the people at the site. It's about regular inspections." Councillor Stephen Godfrey added, "The council started enforcement action in 2008, and continuous action has been taken against residents of Carousel Park since then. Thousands of pounds of City Council money has been spent on enforcing. The problem is that planning law in this country is very difficult. We have been working with the police and residents to try and control the situation as best we can."
Flags flying as hundreds march. It's accompanied by a photograph with about 20 teenage scouts, boys and girls, all marching and looking towards where the dignitaries are sat. Hundreds of scouts arrived in Winchester city centre to take part in the annual St George's Day parade. Groups of squirrels, beavers, cubs and scouts gathered at the Colebrook Street car park on Sunday, April the 21st. The youngsters on parade set off to march towards the King Alfred statue, before turning round and moving back up the Broadway. They saluted a group of dignitaries on the balcony of the Guildhall, which included Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clare, and the Mayoress, Therese Evans. The parade then marched up the High Street before turning into Winchester Cathedral, where a special St George's Day service took place.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Baker, Kenneth George, passed away peacefully on the 6th of April 2024, aged 89 years. Burt, Leonard Arthur John, passed away peacefully at home on the 2nd of April 2024, aged 93 years. Elliot, Jacqueline Edith Hind, formerly of Northington, passed away peacefully at the Dower House Nursing Home on the 8th of April 2024, aged 94. Fuller, Betty, formerly Lewis, née West, passed away peacefully on the 7th of April 2024 at Winchester Hospice. Gilmore, Sylvia Jill, née White, sadly passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 11th of April 2024, aged 89. Lanfear, George William Thomas, William, Bill, passed away peacefully on Friday the 12th of April 2024, aged 88 years, at Abbots Barton Nursing Home. Lyndon Moore, Nigel, died at Winchester Hospice on the 11th of April 2024, aged 73. Marsh, Raymond Vivian, died on the 6th of April 2024, aged 93. Martin, Janet, née Shafford, passed away peacefully on the 8th of April 2024, aged 90, at Shawford Springs Care Home. Miles, Morris, passed away peacefully on the 16th of April 2024, aged 84 years. Robinson, John E., the butcher in Stockbridge, peacefully at home on the 6th of April 2024, aged 92. Waters, Derek, died peacefully on Wednesday the 3rd of April at West Holm Care Home, Winchester, at the age of 95. White, John Bernard, passed away on the 21st of March 2024. Christian comment has been written by Nigel Hemming this week. The title is Servant Leadership. Thank you, Daphne.
It's predictably depressing to read the headlines about another politician caught in a scandal. In response to recent revelations about Mark Menzies, Matthew Paris suggested that the job of MP attracts those with an enlarged appetite for status, while Rod Liddell suggests that any party in power for long enough becomes enmired in complacency, arrogance, and corruption. Whatever the reasons for this common phenomenon, it reminds me of a call I hear regularly on the popular podcast The Rest Is Politics. This show has fast become one of my favourites over the past year. Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart, both centrists but coming from opposite ends of the political spectrum, dissect the current political scene, making positive arguments, sometimes disagreeing agreeably and calling out bad behaviour. One of their regular suggestions is that every new MP is required to sign up to a code of conduct akin to the Nolan Principles for Standards in Public Life. These standards, which are supposed to apply to anyone working in the public sector, comprise selflessness, integrity, objectivity, accountability, openness, honesty, and leadership. It feels like a no-brainer that these should be the standards we require of our elected politicians. And to be fair, there are many that demonstrate these qualities, but I find it genuinely baffling just how many examples there have been in recent years where this has clearly not been the case. Some of our leading MPs have been shown to cross these lines again and again, and it's hard not to feel that in some ways these standards are being eroded by some of those who are responsible for them. Jesus, one of the most influential public figures in history, advocated leadership standards that were not a million miles away from most of these principles. His style has come to be known as servant leadership. In Matthew 27, following a squabble around which of the disciples should have the most power, he instructed them, "Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Time and again, Jesus demonstrated his leadership through acts of humility, compassion, and service. In Philippians 2, Paul describes how Jesus took on the very nature of a servant and humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. In one of his final acts of service, he literally washed his own disciples' feet at the Last Supper. He was teaching them how to love and serve one another, ahead of his ultimate act of humble sacrifice, to die on the cross. Jesus advocated for honesty, integrity, and transparency, and most of all, humility. When I see a successful leader in public life, it is this quality more than any other that I am looking for. I am often asking myself this question: are they acting for the good of others or themselves? And that comes from Nigel Hemming, who is the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church.
And now, this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with witness to theft, please?
Yes, the first letter comes from Pamela Ford. "For the second time this week, my husband and myself have been witness to wine being stolen from Marks and Spencer. I have spoken to young members of staff and commented on the fact that the wine shelves are situated at the entrance to the shop and have excellent access for shoplifters. The doors always kept open. I have been advised it is head office policy not to keep food near an entrance to the store. But unfortunately, despite many members of the public showing concern, this is a situation that remains unsolved. I wonder how many losses M&S have when stocktaking occurs, and we, the public, have to pay such high prices for the produce sold in store to cover that loss. But I was also informed that they do not employ security officers. On approaching a police community support officer, along with the security officer from Sainsbury's, she showed no interest whatsoever." And that's from Pamela Ford, Saxon Road, Hyde in Winchester.
Letter from Tony Gaster with the headline, "Delivery Plight." "Since COVID, I think a lot of us shop online. I wonder how many deliveries go astray. I've just experienced this, yet I live in a street with numbers, so it's not that difficult. The delivery company says it has been delivered, but not to me. The supplier seems to think it's my fault and I should chase around. When I lived in the Itchen Valley, this happened all the time, but there, I suppose, addresses were sometimes more difficult to find. Have we reached the point where some delivery drivers just don't care? It seems an entirely unregulated system." And that was from Tony Gaster of Oliver's Battery in Winchester.
Now, LF White writes, "It's a huge disappointment to the residents of Q and R parking zones in Winchester that our elected and prospective candidates are not willing to answer questions about parking restrictions that have affected their normal routine. The residents would like to know if our city councillors, Martin Todd and Chris Westwood, are going to support them in their quest for free parking between 6pm to 8am and weekends in Tower Street car park, like it was before 24/7 charges were introduced. The residents are now having to pay to park or walk half a mile to access free parking, as well as paying for on-street permits. The councillors know of the situation and as of April the 21st have not responded to requests that have been sent to them for their support. The residents can only surmise that our councillors won't be supporting them, and ignoring the situation is very dismissive. The residents were told they would be looked after when any changes to the area were made. So are they being deceitful and obfuscating? The residents want to know before the local election. And that's from L.F. White on behalf of Q&R Permit Holders, Sussex Street, Winchester.
Paul Newman writes about failed ideology. I checked the date as soon as I saw the article. The heart of the community. Postmasters are an anchor for high streets and villages. On the Hampshire Chronicle website, April the 2nd. Suspecting a hack or a spoof. Seriously, I have yet to receive the promised reply within 46 days to my Freedom of Information request for data on the number of sub-post office closures arising from the accusation and suspension of sub-postmasters for financial irregularities caused by Horizon. How many sub-post offices have been lost by closure in an era when both banking and postal facilities are vital in face of the rapid contraction of bank branch networks? How many remain vacant, awaiting new appointments or reinstatements? The current inquiry may not address the basic fault of how the Royal Mail was sundered from the GPO before privatisation in 2013, and how the failed attempt to privatise the post office network bequeathed a dysfunctional legacy. An ideology of shrinking the state too often runs counter to common goods, public interests, or an ethos of public service. And that letter was from Paul Anthony Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
I have a letter from Tony Stevens under the headline Withdrawal of Transport Service. When I retired just over 14 years ago, I thought I would volunteer for a local charity to try to give something back to the community. I was taken on by Dial a Ride as a driver for their then smallest vehicle, which could hold a wheelchair and up to three other passengers, albeit a very tight squeeze. I drove one day a week, along with a number of other volunteer drivers, was always very busy throughout my day. The service was provided for individuals with mobility issues and included being picked up at home, taken to a desired destination, shopping, doctors, visiting a friend, etc., as well as the return trip and help with getting any shopping into the home. Unfortunately, along came COVID, and of course everything came to a grinding halt. However, when the service resumed, the number of local Wintonians wanting to use DAR has never returned to pre-COVID levels. Plus, the County Council also withdrew some of its subsidies, such that these people with bus passes were no longer able to enjoy a discount on the cost of using the service. You would think that with the original baby boomers now in their 60s and 70s, there would be more demand for the service than ever. But that hasn't been the case, which is probably just as well, as Hampshire County Council has now decided that from April 2025, they will be withdrawing all funding for DAR, and the service operated by Community First will cease to exist. It might not quite be as bad if the local taxi companies could pick up the slack, albeit at extra cost to the normal fares. But I don't believe there are many taxis that will be able to take a wheelchair. And so those people who use wheelchairs will be totally disenfranchised by the withdrawal of funding to DAR, which apparently amounts to less than 1% of the so-called savings the County Council hopes to make. A small thing, but when combined with other issues, you do wonder if the County Council really cares for the people of Hampshire. And that was from Tony Stevens of Kingsworthy.
And now a letter from Lucia Taylor, headed Boost Our Buses. In your columns on March the 21st, I read that the County Council has received around £400,000 from government to improve and enhance and encourage bus travel in Hampshire. It is a great pity that Winchester City Council is so retrograde when considering use of buses. Our city residents have lived with an eyesore of a bus station for decades. How could the neglected and run-down bus station encourage bus travel? What is more, the Lib Dems propose to have no bus station at all. This makes no sense to all citizens and ratepayers who rely regularly on our bus service, the elderly who may no longer drive, young mothers with small children, school children, and sixth form students. Among this list there is vulnerability and the need for safety for women and girls, especially after dark. How can the absence of a bus station and its facilities be a positive step if we are to value the safety of vulnerable members of our society? If we choose not to drive, how do the City Council members encourage bus use? Clearly, they do not. And that's from Lucia Taylor, West End Terrace, Winchester.
The next letter is from Shane O'Flynn, and it's the letter that was referred to in our opening news item about the proposal for the new NHS Hampshire Hospital.
Yeah.
Annie Saunders, in the Chronicle Letters of April the 4th, is certainly right that the obvious place for the new North Hampshire NHS Hospital would be between the two major conurbations of Winchester and Basingstoke. As she points out, people in Basingstoke would be up in arms, deluging the Basingstoke Gazette with letters of complaint if the new hospital was sited in Winchester. There is an obvious location between the two conurbations in plain sight, which has the capacity for the new hospital and far preferable to it being out at junction 7 of the M3 on the edge of Basingstoke. The obvious place, which can be the compromise acceptable to all the communities, is the land available at Mitchell Devers Station, equidistant between Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover, which has a rail station and excellent road access as well. As promoter of the land at Mitchell Devers Station, I can confirm that the site is available. An additional new factor since the NHS last considered our site almost 5 years ago is that the Basingstoke local plan now proposes development of a garden village at Popham, which will bring large-scale residential development to the area and new housing for potential staff for a new hospital in the area. The case for a new hospital, other employment uses and sustainable housing development on the other side of the A303 at Mitchell Devers Station makes even more sense than it did in 2020. We have accordingly submitted our representation to the recent NHS consultation, calling for the choice of site to be reconsidered to better serve the local populations within its catchment. And so that's from Shane O'Flynn of the O'Flynn Group, Grange Drive, Southampton.
This letter is headed Help at Last. With the increasing influx of political leaflets, may I express the gratitude of the people of Lilliput that giants of change are now amongst us with an intention to lay waste to our seemingly intractable problems. It is always reassuring that resolution lies merely at the intersection of a small, dark crayon mark. That's from S.J. Keir of Abbots Barton in Winchester.
And now another very short letter, and it is from Peter Lydiard. And it's headed Sunak's letter. I have just received a letter purporting to be from the Prime Minister, which turns out to be sent from Conservative Central HQ and is nothing more than a party political leaflet. Please would someone point out to Rishi Sunak that when writing as Prime Minister, he is representing the British people, not the Conservative Party. And that's from Peter Lydiard, Parchment Street, Winchester.
Dart's plan. We are currently appealing to businesses to see if they would be interested in a sponsorship opportunity for a local dart tournament called the Sportsman's Summer Darts Open, being held in August at the Sportsman's Club in Stanmore, Winchester. The tournament is based at a social club in Winchester and is an open-style darts event. Our two previous events have had over 150 attendants, and we have paid out over £1,600 in prize money. We are seeking companies to sponsor a dart board for the event. The cost per board is £50 in return for on the day and social media advertising ahead of the tournament. We would love to hear from you if this is something of interest. Please email the following email address: lisa.holt@btinternet.com. And that letter is from Lisa Holt in Eastleigh.
This letter, under the headline of Great Comfort, comes from Karen Barrett. I would like to express my thanks to everyone who sent me and my family such kind messages following the recent death of my son, Alex Barrett. The numbers who attended his funeral at Cheslow House or watched the live stream were truly overwhelming, which made it impossible for me to thank everyone personally at the time. It has been a great comfort during these very dark days to know how loved Alex was and how much he'll be missed, not just by us, but by so many friends with both old and new. I'm extremely grateful for the many donations in Alex's memory to Winchester Hospice, whose staff and volunteers made my boy's last days as peaceful and as dignified as possible. A huge thank you to all of you. From Karen Barrett, Full Flood, Winchester.
And a letter now from Hayley Garner, who is the NSPCC Local Campaigns Manager for London and the South East, headed Listen Up. The NSPCC believes everyone has a part to play in helping to keep children safe, from shop workers and cafe staff to librarians, swimming pool attendants and passengers on public transport. That's why our Listen Up, Speak Up campaign is encouraging schools, businesses and community groups across Hampshire to take part in free workshops offering advice on what to do if you're concerned for a child's safety or well-being and who to contact for support. The workshops are being offered face-to-face and online and run through a series of real-life scenarios, giving practical advice about how to approach challenging situations where a child might be at risk. We are determined to reach as many people and as many communities as possible so we can inspire a movement of change that ensures all children and young people live happier, safer lives. We would love to hear from you about hosting one of our Listen Up, Speak Up workshops. So please do get in touch and together we can make a difference. To organise or attend a workshop, please email londonsoutheastcampaigns@nspcc.org.uk. We require a minimum of 10 people at each face-to-face session. However, anyone can sign up to our free 10-minute online training by visiting www.nspcc.org.uk/speak up. And as I said, that comes from Hayley Garner.
Our final letter this week comes from John McLaren, Secretary of Winchester City FC, and it's entitled End of an Era. End of an era, but exciting times ahead in the Southern Premier League for Winchester City FC at the Charters Community Stadium. The last game ever on our old undulating grass pitch was a tight affair against a tough opponent in Beaconsfield Town, with Winchester City running out 1-0 winners on the day. This season has seen over 25% of home games having to be rearranged due to a waterlogged pitch. Add in the 37 youth teams that play for the Winchester City FC badge, and that is a lot of sporting weekends completely washed out. Next week, the contractors will arrive and will make a start, creating a new, smooth and flat all-weather surface, which will allow not only Winchester City FC to play and train with minimal disruption to fixture schedules, but also enable Winchester City Flyers ladies teams to have a home ground to play at. And that letter was from John McLaren, Hillier Way, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you could also write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we'll continue now with editorial comment, letter from Westminster, First Person and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with Time for Action Over Planning Policies. She writes, it's not surprising that villagers in Mitcheldever are unhappy about the status of Carousel Park, a community of caravans in Basingstoke Road near the village. When it opened around 15 years ago, it was supposed to be a place for travelling show people to live in the winter months and store their equipment when not on the road with their circuses and fairgrounds. Villagers say it has never been used by travelling show people, but instead has been taken over by a wide variety of residents. The issue was raised at the recent Mitcheldever Parish Assembly, as reported in this week's issue. One villager said, people are petrified. They've told me things that would make your hair curl. Very few people have come tonight because they're afraid of retribution from the people in Carousel Park. It's about time for action. It's hard to disagree. The meeting heard that the council had been taking enforcement action, but it's difficult to see any result other than examples of the seeming feebleness of the council in enforcing its own planning policy. That is certainly the view of the people living in the Mitcheldever area. The snag with all this is once a council gets a reputation for being a soft touch, then word spreads, and others are inclined to cock a snook, as has happened in several places in the southern parishes. There is an argument that such enforcement costs money. But unless sufficient funds are set aside for enforcing planning policy at an early stage, things will drift, and more money is spent further down the line. A vicious circle is created. It's time to try to arrest that decline. And now the letter from Westminster. This week it's from the Winchester MP Steve Brine. Richard, over to you.
Thank you. Letter from Westminster. Last week I voted for the tobacco and vapes bill. Smoking is our biggest preventable killer, so there is no more obvious target for healthcare gains to save lives lost to cancer, heart disease and stroke each year. Bottom line, smoking is the only product on sale legally that, if you follow the instructions, will very probably kill you. Governments have acted in the past and we've seen smoking rates tumble. It's time to finish the job, and this bill is part of that. We talk a lot about the pressures on the NHS, about public satisfaction systems and staffing. We can increase the NHS budget and put in place a properly funded workforce plan. We've done both. We can produce COVID recovery plans for urgent and emergency care, for primary care and elective waiting lists, and the government have done them all. But the truth is, demand continues to outstrip supply. And we cannot continue to increase the health budget faster than GDP. We must think long-term about population preventative health. The proposed measures seek to create a smoke-free generation, and modelling shows us that if the age of sale were increased by 1 year every year as proposed in the bill, smoking rates among 14 to 30-year-olds are likely to be zero by 2050. I've said since the Prime Minister announced these measures in his conference speech last year, the government has to win the argument as well as the vote. I believe ministers have done that, but we can't get away from the fact we will have a situation at some future point where a 50-year-old can legally smoke while a 49-year-old cannot. It is rather inelegant, but it misses the very point of the smoke-free ambition this bill has at its heart. It doesn't criminalise existing smokers, and it ensures the purchase of tobacco by those underage will not be criminalised by this legislation. Compliance will be the responsibility of the businesses, as is the case with the current law. It makes it illegal to sell tobacco products to anyone who is born on or after New Year's Day 2009. And that includes my 13-year-old son. By passing this legislation, the state is saying to him, it's not okay to start smoking when you reach the age of 18. And I think when we look back, we will ask, how did we ever say it was? By doing so, my son never becomes that 49-year-old. That's the point. We're told raising the age of sale will fuel the black market, and the next generation of smokers will pick up the habit via illicit sales. A comprehensive anti-smuggling strategy has succeeded in halving the illicit market share from 22 to 11%, and I welcome how the work of Border Force and HMRC has been updated in light of this proposed legislation. Am I just being hopeful in thinking that it will work? No. When the age of sale was raised from 16 to 18 in 2007, the illicit market did not increase. Of course, we must continue to give help to quit advice to current smokers, and that needs funding. I welcome £70 million a year for the next 5 years into stop smoking services, and to pay for that, ministers should look again at a tobacco industry levy. In this debate, we often hear about the nanny state. I have always believed that in a publicly funded healthcare system, we have a right, and indeed a responsibility, to act on public health, because it becomes everyone's problem when we don't. More on this at stevebrine.com www.winchester.org/news. And that's from the Winchester MP, Mr. Steve Bryan.
Thank you. Now, in first person, Khalid Aziz writes about In Footsteps of Heroes. Here's Daphne.
When we were trying to raise the many millions needed to fund Naomi House, our children's hospice, among the most successful initiatives was the Clarendon Way Walk. It was the brainchild of Jeanette Hollingberry, wife of George, one-time MP of this parish, and now our man in Havana, having been bagman to Theresa May. Jeanette thought it would be a great idea to run a sponsored walk between the two great cathedral cities of Winchester and Salisbury, a distance of 26 miles, through the best countryside that Hampshire and Wiltshire have to offer. From the outset, the idea took off, and now in its 18th year, it's raised hundreds of thousands of pounds for Naomi House. This year's walk is on June the 2nd, so get your name down quick for either all of it, half of it from Broughton to Salisbury, or break yourself in on just 5 miles from Pitton to Salisbury. People like to walk, and in particular along historic routes. I have had the great pleasure of walking the Great Wall of China. Not all of it, you understand. In all, it runs for over 4,000 miles. But enough to marvel at the ingenuity of this defensive structure, with its steps so irregular that you daren't look up to see where you're going for fear of tripping. Even if marauders topped the wall, they were easy pickings for the defending soldiers, billeted every couple of 100 yards or so. Now there's a new walk, showcased last week at a charming event at Winchester College. The Western Front Way runs for more than 600 miles through no man's land. It was the idea of Alexander Bay Gillespie, who came to Winchester College as a scholar in 1903. After Oxford, he was reading for the bar when war broke out, so he signed up. He was sent to the front in February 1915. By the end of September, he was dead, killed on the first day of the Battle of Loos. Before he died, Gillespie had written to his old Wincoll headmaster about his idea for a Via Sacra, or Sacred Way. When peace comes, our government might combine with the French government to make one long avenue between the lines. The ground is so pitted and scarred and torn with shells and tangled with wires, it will take years, but would make a fine broad road with paths for pilgrims on foot and trees for shade and fruit. Well, it's taken a while, but descendants of those who served, including Gillespie's great-niece, Lal Mills, and her friend, Iona Priestley, supported by Sir Anthony Seldon, have, after many years of toil, made it happen. Visiting the War Cloister in Winchester College, you cannot fail to be moved by the sacrifice made by young men in the 1914-18 war. 500 Wickhamists alone, a figure repeated in schools up and down the land. In March, they opened a Western Front path in the Meads, echoing Gillespie's plan and inscribed Via Sacra. Last week, a delightful evening of words and music, written and performed by Jan Carey, great-niece to General George Carey, who held the gap at Amiens, brought to life once again this important project. It featured the life and music of Ivor Gurney, the English Schubert. Gassed, he survived Passchendaele, but never recovered his mental health. His music lives on. To make a walk work is not as easy as it sounds. It needs mapping and signposting, which costs money. Initially, there was lukewarm enthusiasm for the project on the continent, but now the signposting is up, it was announced last week that the French and Belgian governments will support future maintenance. And so it should be. The UK promoters led the way with the Western Front logo, featuring the poppy, cornflower for France, Daisy for Belgium, and Forget-Me-Not for Germany. We will remember them.
And now Bulgarum has gone rock and roll this week. Tell us more, Nick.
Yes, one piece this week, entitled Rockstar's Record Bid. Frank Turner is to attempt a world record for the most gigs in different cities in 24 hours, with 15 shows, including Southampton and Winchester. As he approaches his 3,000th live show and the release of his upcoming 10th album, the celebrated Hampshire singer-songwriter, who grew up in Meonstoke, will embark on the attempt for the Music Venue Trust on May the 4th. In a time frame of 24 hours, Frank has to play 15 solo shows, with each set a minimum of 20 minutes. The challenge will support grassroots venues and independent record stores across the country. The schedule will see him complete the challenge on May the 5th at the Railway in St Paul's Hill, Winchester, for Pie and Vinyl at 10:30 a.m. and at the Brook in Portswood, Southampton, for Vinilo at midday. Frank told the Daily Echo, the Chronicle's sister paper, "I've never been one to do things by halves or shirk a challenge. I once played all 50 American states in 50 days, for goodness sake. We're working with 13 independent record shops and 15 independent grassroots musical venues for the shows, highlighting two bits of the infrastructure of the underground that I care about most. It's going to be tough, but hopefully fun too." And there's a picture there of Frank Turner with his guitar hanging round his neck, his arms outstretched, bedecked with a variety of tattoos up and down.
He's very rock and roll. I love Frank
Turner. Rock.
Oh, thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. There's a new film, a feature documentary called Chasing the Sun, and that's going to be screened at the Arc in Winchester on Saturday, May the 18th. It focuses on the power of the bicycle to help save the planet and explores extraordinary personal stories of ordinary cyclists chasing the sun. The film also features local cycling champions Ollie Moore, founder of Chase the Sun, the UK's longest one-day endurance cycle event, and campaigner Emma Street, a contributor behind Winchester's Mass Ride and School Bike Bus. Tickets are for the screening at the Arc are £10. There's a cafe bar on site, and there are two screenings, one at 4 p.m. and one at 7 p.m. Well, there's a nice picture of lots of children all with their helmets on cycling to school. Now, other events coming up in the next couple of weeks. There's a plant sale in Hyde on Saturday the 27th of April. That's at 10 a.m. That's at Monk's Road in Winchester. On Friday the 3rd of May, Hugh Dennis and Steve Punt are back on tour, and they're at the Theatre Royal. That's on Friday at 7:30 p.m. On Saturday the 4th of May, come and sing with Southern Voices. This is at 10 a.m. Do you enjoy singing? Would you like the chance to sing with one of Winchester's premier choirs? If so, this event is for you. It's at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill in Winchester. And there's a phone number, which is 07586 301303, if you would like more information. On Monday the 6th of May, Ruth Theodore is performing at the Hyde Tavern at 7:30. And she's got an exciting lineup of musicians performing with her. On Friday, the 10th of May, there's coffee and cake at Rick Stein's at 9 a.m. and that's a fundraiser for Muscular Dystrophy UK. And on Saturday, the 11th of May, we've got the Whitchurch Folk Festival starting at 10 a.m. and a traditional folk music and dance festival at Whitchurch Baptist Church, Newbury Street, Whitchurch. Sounds like a nice event. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 27th of April, the sun will set at 8:22 p.m. and on Wednesday the 1st of May, the sun will rise at 5:37 a.m. and will set at 8:28 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Richard, would you like to kick us off, please?
Spring COVID vaccination programme underway. COVID is still with us, we must remember. The spring COVID-19 vaccination campaign has started in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, targeting the most vulnerable residents. From April the 15th, care home dwellers are being prioritised. Meanwhile, the national booking system has been accepting appointments for other qualified individuals from April 22 onwards. People aged 75 and above, adults and children over 6 months with compromised immune systems are eligible for the spring vaccinations. A wide range of vaccination centres, including GP practices, pharmacies and temporary clinics, are administering the jabs. Dr. Matt Nesbitt, GP and clinical lead for the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight COVID-19 vaccination programme, said, "While the COVID-19 panic may seem a thing of the past, and we're grateful that for the large part we are continuing to live our lives like normal, we know the virus continues to circulate. Some people may wonder why they keep being offered the vaccination, and the answer to that is simple. Viruses change over time, and therefore so does the vaccine to make sure you are offered the best protection."
Cafe with doors open to all. Romsey Baptist Church's volunteer-run community cafe strives for a more mentally healthy community, and it opens its doors to all, religious or not. The cafe was started by a frequent churchgoer, Bronwyn Clemens, as a means of looking after more vulnerable members. Bronwyn is a mental health nurse. She said, "I noticed how at weekends all clubs stopped, and that must be lonely for some people." Originally, the cafe started as a small event on the first Saturday of the month as an attempt to tackle weekend loneliness. Since the pandemic and its lockdown measures, the cafe has grown to be so much more. Kevin said he was recommended to the cafe after some struggles with some unwell family members. He said, "I wasn't sure if I would fit in. I'm not religious, but it really is a safe place here." Many visitors live in Romsey and commute by foot or bicycle, but the success of the cafe is also apparent on those in surrounding villages like Abridge and Lockerley. Many seek consolation and a chance to talk their worries out with someone who will listen. Debbie, who renewed her vows at Romsey Baptist Church, said, "Thanks to the cafe, I had a chance to get my life back." She said, "The warmth and general kindness of the community in Romsey is truly magical, and something every community should strive to have in order for people to help each other out." Though some of those who attend the cafe are religious and attend the Sunday service, Jan described why, as an atheist, she attends the Saturday cafe. She said, "I love hearing these interesting stories, and the people are simply wonderful." Since becoming bigger, Romsey Baptist Church's community cafe has become a weekly event. Graham, who only lives a short walk from the church, said, "The people are just friendly, and the atmosphere really portrays this. And as a little footnote, this article was written by Lily Beeson from Peter Simmons College as part of NewsQuest's Young Reporter scheme.
Heartbreak at the theft of lead from church roof. The vicar of a church which has had lead stolen from its roof has called the experience heartbreaking. St Mark's Church in Winchester Road, Ampfield, was targeted between Tuesday, April the 16th and Wednesday, April the 17th. The Reverend Vanessa Lawrence said, "It's really sad. I first noticed that a big lump of stone had fallen off the church last Wednesday morning, April the 17th, and I couldn't work out what had caused that. So I rang a builder, and the architect and builder came and had a look and said that the lead had been stolen. Getting up on the roof, the thieves have caused quite a lot of damage to the stonework, as well as removing all the lead, which is really sad. We have an ex-church warden who had to deal with this 6 or 7 years ago when it happened before, and so he checks to make sure the lead is still there when he drives past. He checked last Tuesday, so we know it was there on Tuesday, that's April the 16th, and it had gone by Wednesday afternoon. Obviously, that is quite a small window, so if anyone was around or passing and noticed anything unusual in that time slot, we would be grateful for any information." Reverend Lawrence said, "It is not known how much it will cost to repair the damage or replace the lead." She added that, "Although the church has CCTV on the roof, the thieves managed to avoid the cameras. However, the lead has been marked with a smart water system, which Reverend Lawrence hopes will aid police in tracking it down." She continued, "It's really heartbreaking, and a lot of our church members have been heartbroken as well. We love our church very much, and people put a lot of time and energy and love into caring for the church building, and have done so for many years, and it has so much meaning for so many people. And I think, in a very broken and troubled world, the church stands for something hopeful and something that is good. And so to have it damaged like that, it really does hurt." Reverend Lawrence said replacing the lead could take some weeks due to needing to arrange building works and liaising with the Diocese of Winchester.
Mel the Peregrine lays and loses egg number 3. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine falcon laid a third egg. However, it has fallen off the nesting tray. Having laid her first egg on Friday, April the 12th, and her second on Sunday, April the 14th, Mel's third came in the middle of last week. However, people noticed that the new egg had rolled out of the nesting tray, with Mel only incubating two. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "There is no end to the drama this year. Earlier this week that saw that Mel had laid a third egg, but then a day later it had vanished." However, what has happened is that the third egg had somehow got rolled off the tray to the right, as you can see in the photo that accompanied this article. But we now don't know how this happened. Maybe Mel will be content with two eggs. Things like this can happen. Mel's predecessor, Winnie, stood on an egg 1 year, causing it to crack. Peregrines need to have large feet to catch prey, and those talons are dangerous around the eggs. That is why they usually hobble around the nest tray with their toes turned inwards. Try that at home. It's not easy.
Grandmother's 1,000-kilometre ride. A Winchester grandmother is cycling 1,000 kilometres to raise money for vulnerable communities around the world. Each year, for 30 years, retired health worker Jane Huff, 76, embarks on a sponsored cycling adventure in support of International Development Agency Christian Aid. Previously, her travels have taken her through Spain, France, Italy, Croatia, and Norway. This time, she is off on a 1,000-kilometre challenge along the Danube cycle path on May the 14th. Jane, from Week, has set a target of £1,000 and by Saturday, April the 20th, raised £290. On her fundraising page, she says, "Everyone is equal in the sight of God. For over 75 years, this truth has inspired us to stand together in solidarity with our most marginalised global neighbours of all faiths and none. My husband, Jim, worked in over 50 developing countries and inspired me to help in my own way." And that's accompanied by a couple of pictures of Jane in full cycling gear, helmet on, pedalling away on her very trusty-looking bike with big panniers on the back.
Plans for free trips on Vintage Bus Day. Excitement is mounting in the heritage bus and coach world around Hampshire in the south of England as the date for the original King Alfred Running Day draws closer. On Monday, May the 6th, the Friends of King Alfred buses, known as FOCAB, will be operating 14 vehicles from its collection, the largest number in its almost 40-year history. Alongside these Winchester-based buses and coaches, FOCAB will be welcoming some 28 visiting vehicles, so that altogether more than 40 historic vehicles will be offering free rides in and around the city on the first bank holiday in May. Buses ranging from 95 years old to the most modern one, built as recently in 2002, will be in operation. Activity centres on Winchester Broadway, in the shadow of the statue of Alfred the Great, whose likeness is carried on the side panels of the King Alfred buses. In addition, there will be more vintage buses on display at St Catherine's Park and Ride site, from which a frequent shuttle service will operate to and from Winchester Broadway. Thousands of people are expected in the city to take advantage of the unique opportunities of the day to take a trip, or several, for free down memory lane. As usual, a comprehensive souvenir programme and timetable will shortly be available, priced at £15 in advance or on the day. Sales of these programmes provide funding to support the day's activities and the work of the Friends of King Alfred Buses, registered charity. Alongside the usual range of destinations in and around Winchester, the popular circular service to the historic Twyford Waterworks features again this year, running every half hour. This coincides with an open day at the Waterworks, where the organisers are offering each holder of a King Alfred programme one free admission. And its article is accompanied by a photograph of a 1970 King Alfred single-deck Leyland Panther bus turning right at Longwood Crossroads on its way to Oslebury up on the Downs.
Flavours of Georgia. A Georgian wine business will be holding a wine tasting dinner this May. Kasia Gulashvili, the founder of Geo Naturals, a wine importer and UK distributor, it distributes to private wine shops and restaurants across the region and has a market stall at the Winchester Market regularly on Saturdays. The stand is in front of M&S, which owner Kaha has described as the permanent place for us. The business offers a wide selection of up to 20 Georgian wines which can be tasted. Georgia is one of the oldest winemaking countries in the world and is home to more than 500 different endemic indigenous grape types which do not exist anywhere else. Georgia still makes amber and red wines in quiveri, using an ancient method. A quiveri is a large earthenware vessel used for fermentation, storage and aging, free of any animal product or artificial yeast. Geo Naturals will be holding a wine tasting dinner on Friday, May the 10th at St. Paul's Church in Winchester. The dinner will be for around 2 hours with 4 pre-dinner wine tastings and 3 wine tastings during dinner. The menu will showcase the best of Georgian food. Each course will be served with a Georgian wine picked specifically to complement the dish. The evening will be led by Kahar and includes a presentation about the wines, Georgian winemaking methods and history. Owner of Geo Naturals, Kahar said, "I'm very excited to bring an element of Georgian traditions and cuisine to the heart of Winchester."
Campaign to save white-clawed crayfish. A Hampshire zoo has launched an appeal for funds to help with one of the UK's most endangered native species. Marwell Wildlife is hoping to raise £20,000, which will go towards a breeding centre at the zoo for white-clawed crayfish. The crayfish, which can be found in chalk streams such as the Itchen and Test, have declined in numbers since the 1970s as a result of habitat loss, pollution, disease, and invasive species. In the wild, the species acts as a clean-up crew, and it's a food source for animals, including swans and otters, who build their homes on these waterways. Guests at the zoo will be able to visit the breeding centre and see the crayfish up close, observe the team's work, and learn all about this species. Dr. Will Justice, Director of Animal Care at Marwell Zoo, said, "Marwell is probably best known for its more exotic animals and for our conservation work with big cats, greavy zebra, and scimitar-horned oryx. But we've been working for over 30 years to support the recovery of nature and wildlife here in Hampshire and across the South Coast too. White-clawed crayfish are a really important UK species. Our project is an opportunity for us to utilise the expertise and skills we have here at Marwell, both in terms of animal management, welfare and husbandry, but also in conservation science, education and impact. Together with our supporters and through the Green Match Fund, we can help to protect and save part of our own natural heritage, making a difference to wildlife on our own doorstep." And there's a very striking picture of a white-clawed crayfish here, with its very distinctive white claws. I always understood that one of the problems was that the American crayfish had invaded the streams and was seeing off the white-clawed one. So hopefully this work can help save it.
Wet weather delays monument conservation work. A Hampshire monument's conservation works have been delayed due to wet weather. The Farley Mount Monument shut in March and was expected to reopen on Thursday, April the 25th. However, Hampshire County Council said it has been delayed to mid-May. A spokesman said, "The specialist conservation work to repair the significant damage and decay to the historic monument has been delayed by the exceptionally wet weather in March, which had saturated the masonry structure and slowed progress on the sensitive restoration work. The structure was built around 1795 and is named after a horse called Beware Chalkpit. It belonged to Paulet St. John, the 3rd Earl of Bolingbroke. An inscription on a plaque on the north wall says, 'Underneath lies buried a horse, the property of Paulet St. John, Esquire, that in the month of September 1733 leaped into a chalk pit 25 feet deep, a fox hunting, with his master on his back. And in October 1734, he won the hunter's plate on Worthy Down and was rode by his owner and was entered in the name of Beware Chalkpit.' And there's a lovely picture of the monument, surrounded at the moment by scaffolding alongside the trig point right up on the top of Farley Mount.
Book based on City Cafe launched at festival. A Winchester author has published a new book based on a city centre community cafe. Alice Peterson's latest novel, The Saturday Place, was launched at an event organised by the Winchester Books Festival. The book is based on First Bite, which operated in the city centre until 2021. Miss Peterson's book was written after she visited the cafe and interviewed volunteers and people who used it. The launch event was held at Milner Hall in St. Peter Street on Thursday, April the 18th. This was the second launch event organised by the Winchester Books Festival after local author Claire Fuller released The Memory of Animals last year. Miss Peterson said, "I was sitting at home eating some cereal and watching the news, and I saw a clip of the Goring Hotel in London opening its doors to people, some disadvantaged people, some homeless, some giving them cooking classes, all sorts. This really sparked something in me, and I mentioned it to a local friend who sent me to Debbie Lockett's cafe in Winchester. It's called First Bite. So I went along, and I just remember a sea of people all eating at tables, talking and laughing. I really enjoyed the atmosphere. I managed to pin down Debbie for a cup of coffee, and she told me about why she started First Bite and what it meant to her, and spoke very movingly about her volunteers. It just felt like a base for second chances for so many people. I asked if I could come along and speak to people at the cafe, and she said yes. I remember walking home and feeling so excited about this wonderful idea. Everyone was so kind, they were very welcoming to me. I met some wonderful people with incredible stories. That was how the idea came about, and I crafted the story around it. The Saturday Place is available at P&G Wells in College Street and online.
Nostalgic hen dog work unveiled at Care Home. A Winchester dementia care home has become the latest canvas for anonymous street artist Hen Dog, sometimes described as Hampshire's answer to Banksy. The mural, a hallmark memory, has been given pride of place on a wall in the garden of Colton Care's St Catherine's View in Stanmore. The picture features St Catherine's View resident Sue Overy and a little girl, Athena Mackey, holding a teddy bear as the pair walk towards Winchester Cathedral. The artwork came about after Laura Sheldrake, companionship team leader at the Stanmore Lane home, put out a plea on social media to coincide with World Art Day. Laura asked if any artists in the community would like to come to the home and paint a mural in the garden. Hen Dog responded, along with fellow artist Addie Thomas, paving the way for them to work together on the idea. When Hen Dog visited St Catherine's View to show Laura an initial design concept, they brought Athena along to model the little girl image. To complement that, resident Sue accepted an invitation to also be in the shot. Laura said, "You could see straight away that it was going to be a beautiful piece of art, and Athena was an absolute delight." She and Sue helped Hen Dog frame the perfect image for the mural. Sue's involvement added a unique personal touch for her and everyone at our home. A few days later, Hen Dog and Addie came along to St Catherine's View, armed with pens, stencils and plenty of spray paint, and got to work. It took them 6 hours to complete the painting and installation, and it was worth every second. Laura organised an unveiling for residents, families, staff, friends and community contacts, supplemented by homemade cake and bubbly. She added, "Everyone loved the artwork. It even brought one or two people to tears because of how beautiful it is and what it captures." Sue said, "It is wonderful. I used to go to Winchester Cathedral all the time with my husband. I can't believe that is me on the wall. They've done a great job. In an Instagram post, Hendog wrote, "Art for me has always been about the people who view it. I wanted to create a nostalgic piece where the residents could imagine themselves as the grandparent or the child to help them find joy in a world where they may feel lost. I've also left it unfinished so the grandchildren of the residents can add to it, and hopefully this will make them feel more at home." Addie said, "Working alongside Hendog was an honour and pleasure to see them at work." Among the guests joining Sue, Athena and Addie at the unveiling were Pam Meir, a volunteer guide at Winchester Cathedral, and local city councillor Jamie Scott. And there are two lovely pictures. You can see the mural on the wall here, and that's surrounded by residents, families, team members and some friends. And then the second picture is Athena herself putting a little flower on it, because there is quite a space at the bottom of it for children to add whatever they want to.
Fine dining on menu at Heritage Railway. A Hampshire Heritage Railway has launched a new formal dining service on one of its trains. The Royal Wessex Fine Dining Sunday Lunch Service will offer Watercress Line passengers a three-course Sunday lunch in the railway's first-class Pullman-style carriages as they travel between Aylesford and Alton. It was launched at the Watercress Line in Aylesford on Sunday, April the 14th, by a special guest, the commanding officer of the Royal Wessex Yeomanry, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Sharman. Colonel Sharman congratulated the Watercress Line on the new service before cutting a red ribbon and launching the Royal Wessex. He then joined other guests to enjoy the dining service on the inaugural journey. Rebecca Daly, CEO of the Watercress Line, said, "It was an honour and a pleasure to welcome Colonel Sharman. Our diners can relax in the sumptuous comfort of the Royal Wessex carriages, furnished with richly upholstered seats, cosy table lamps in the windows, curtains and tables laid with white damask cloths. The gastronomic lunch, prepared by Lemon Stone Events, is served with a selection of fine wines, including English sparkling wines. It's a chance to return to a bygone era and sure to be an unforgettable experience. It's already proving to be a popular choice." The original Royal Wessex service was introduced by British Railways in May 1951. It was one of a number of named trains introduced to commemorate the Festival of Britain that year, and transported people from the south coast to the festival in London. It left Bournemouth West on Mondays to Saturdays at 8:20 in the morning for Southampton and London Waterloo, making its return from Waterloo at 4:35 p.m. It stopped running as a named train in the 1960s when steam haulage ceased in the region. The train was hauled by a Merchant Navy or West Country class locomotive and used a dedicated set of the newly designed all-steel standard Mark I carriages, still used on the Watercress Line to this day. And of course there are a couple of accompanying photos to go with that, one of them showing Colonel Sharman and members of the Watercress Line toasting the start of the service in front of the steam locomotive, the Royal Wessex, and another one showing the Flying Scotsman's visit to the Watercress Line, and the train looks as though it's in Ropley Station there.
Organisers hope event will illuminate. The organisers of TEDx Winchester are looking forward to a sell-out event this year. With more than half the tickets already sold, the event will be held on Friday, June the 14th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Winchester University. The theme of this year's event is Illuminate, and it is supported by Dutton Gregory Solicitors as well as the University. It is an independent, self-organised event licensed by TED. Speakers come from the worlds of technology, fashion, diversity and art. They will share their ideas and stories in 18-minute presentations. The latest additions to the programme include the Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association, WUCA. Holly Budge, adventurer and the first woman to skydive Everest, also joins the lineup. Also announced to take the stage is Mark Drury, who works at the intersection of art, architecture and placemaking, creating multi-award-winning building and youth projects. WUCA, Holly and Mark will join the previously announced speakers, Jenny Mazels, Pascal Mathias, Tiffany St. James and Emily Monsell-Holden. More speakers announcements are expected soon. Tickets are available at tedxwinchester.com. That's T-E-D-X Winchester, all one word, .com. Priced at £39 with concessions at only £29.
TV Egghead in Quiz Talk debut. A TV quiz champion has spoken at a meeting of a Hampshire WI group. Kevin Ashman, known as one of the Eggheads on the Channel 5 TV show, met members of the Katherington Women's Institute earlier this month. The meeting was held at All Saints Church Hall. It was the first time that Kevin, who was born, raised and still lives in Winchester, had spoken to a WI group. He said that he accepted the invitation after he met some members at the Chichester Festival Theatre. In his talk, Kevin said appearing on Eggheads has led him to be recognised in some odd places around the world. He also discussed his travels in industry. The WI heard all about his early life and how he succeeded in winning major competitions including Mastermind, Brain of Britain, Brain of Brains and many more. Kevin is an avid watcher of University Challenge and concluded by saying there had been so many good players coming through since the pandemic that we should take note of them because they were going to be our future leaders. And that's accompanied by a picture of Kevin with Jean Favell, who's president of the Katherington WI.
Easter Bunny's happy landing at hospices. The Easter Bunny flew into Naomi House and Jack's Place on a helicopter. Accompanied by the Gazelle Squadron display team, the bunny hopped out and gave out Easter eggs to all the visitors on Teletubby Hill at Sutton Scotney. He met children, staff and posed for several photographs. During his time at the hospices on April the 6th, the bunny also shared Naomi House and Jack's Place Easter-themed cake before his departure. Claire Potterton, play and activities team leader at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Every year, the Gazelle Squadron display team volunteer their time to fly their helicopter to Naomi House and Jack's Place and bring a special guest for the children and young adults. Santa at Christmas or the Easter Bunny during Easter." The Easter Bunny said, and yes, they do talk, "Naomi House and Jack's Place is so close to my heart. It's a very special place." And there is, of course, a photograph of the Easter Bunny with the Gazelle Squadron pilot. And I have to tell you, the Easter Bunny is quite tall. He's taller than the pilot with the helicopter in the background.
Thank you, everyone. I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, And of course, thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Richard Stead.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.